Baseball Central and the Sportsnet Radio Network is brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. Analysis and opinion so honest, it's just a matter of time before they get themselves in trouble. Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome everybody to the penultimate edition of Baseball Central at noon for Thursday, October 2nd. One more day, and then we turn it over to Hockey Central at noon, which is okay. We got some playoff baseball to talk about.
It was a fun year.
Well, it wasn't as much fun as it could have been if the local team had, Anyhow, we can
meaningful
talk.
Baseball.
Yeah, we had meaningful baseball. We had meaningful baseball central at noon. That's all I was. That's all I was hoping for. The division series are set. The San Francisco Giants. Well, they beat the Pirates 8-0. That was a game for about two and two-thirds innings, I guess. Basically,
until the grand slam was hit.
Yeah, that it wasn't based on what we saw in the Royals Athletics game. It was a bit of a letdown. Nonetheless, the Giants, as they have done quite often, that's their seventh consecutive win in an elimination game. They have moved on. They will play the Washington Nationals. The Cardinals and Dodgers will play tomorrow as well. Today, the American League gets going 5:37 p.m. First pitch scheduled on Sportsnet 1 as 5:37 or 4:37, Travis. Can we check that? It'll be the Detroit Tigers at the Baltimore Orioles. We'll have that game on Sportsnet 5:37. Thank you. We'll have that game on Sportsnet 1 at 5:37. Game 2 in Anaheim at 8:30 between the Royals and Angels. That'll be in Sportsnet 1. We will carry that game live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We will join the Orioles-Tigers game in progress at 7 o'clock. So, we talked a little bit yesterday, Kevin, about the Pirates and the Giants. In terms of my heart, I mean, I like both those teams. I kind of wanted to see the Pirates go on for a variety of reasons. But, you know, you watched the Giants, and whether it was body language at the start, Madison Bumgarner dominating the way he did, guys like Pablo Sandoval who haven't been able to get a hit, suddenly they can't not hit. You saw, I think, a team that understands what it takes to win in the postseason.
Been there and done that. I think that's what it is. You can't, I think I was looking at something, 15 of the starting, the 25-man roster for the Giants have rings.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I mean, if you don't want to talk about any other team other than that, that right there, if you're willing to pick one team that has more experience and has just really been there and done that, the Giants have done it.
And they know how to react. They know, I think, more than anything else, they're a team that really has, they've got a real sense of self. There's a real sort of self-belief to that group. But Kevin, it also doesn't hurt when you're sending Madison Bumgarner out there. I mean, that was almost a textbook version of how you attack a team, wasn't it?
He's really good. Well, he knew that team was going to be aggressive, meaning the Pirates. And they were a younger group that were trying to do it not only for their team but for the fans, for Pittsburgh. And I think he exploited that. He went after weaknesses. And a lot of pitchers, that's not very easy to do, going on the road and trying to figure out how to get guys out. And he used his breaking ball a lot. If you notice, when he threw his breaking ball, it was never a strike.
And they were going after it.
That's how you get big league hitters out. You throw enough fastballs. Greg Zahn talks about it all the time. Establish fastball down and away early, and it sets up off-speed pitches. And it's like you said, it's textbook. And then you get timely hits. That's how you win in the playoffs. You have timely hits. But you have to remember, you have to win on the road. Good playoff teams, good teams that win championships all the time, have to win on the road. And the Giants are a proven team. That they know how to get it done really everywhere.
The other thing I really liked about how Madison Bumgarner and Buster Posey attacked the Pirates is when they got that early lead, you know, you've just taken an aggressive team, the Pirates, and now you've jacked it up a bit because now you've got an aggressive team that's down by a lot. Mm-hmm. So you know that they're going to go up there and there's going to be a sense of urgency. And, boy, I mean, that played right into Madison Bumgarner's hand. I don't know if I've seen a team strike out as much on balls in the dirt as the Pirates did.
It's like when you – that's why going into that game, you had to think that the Pirates had to score first.
Yes, you made that point in the show, absolutely.
Yeah, they have to get off to a good start and get their fans into the game. And it's like as soon as Crawford hit the grand slam, you could see the bubble had bursted in Pittsburgh. And when it does that, not only on the field but in the fans, you could just see everybody getting quiet. And it's tough. It's tough when teams know how to win and you have a really good manager that, let's face it, knows when he gets a lead, he knows how to get his team to the next game. And the Giants are always a good pick, regardless of how they get in the playoffs or how they're doing when they roll into the playoffs. They're always a good pick just because – the park they play in San Francisco is a big park. It's a pitcher's park. You have to manufacture runs. It's most of the time in the playoffs, it's cold. And there's a certain mindset going into that place that you have to beat that team. And that's why San Francisco is a really tough team to beat. And they're going to be tough going forward. It's going to be a very interesting series and getting to the World Series.
It's Baseball Central at noon with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Before the game last night, Bruce Bochy was asked about Pablo Sandoval, who had not had a very good September. Mm-hmm. And his answer was, I've seen him in batting practice. I've seen him in games lately where he isn't hitting. I think he's ready.
Mm-hmm.
What would it, I mean, obviously you have to know the player. Right. And I'm sure Bruce Bochy knows Pablo Sandoval. But what is it about a guy's swing in particular that would make a manager think that? And he was pointing to the fact that, yeah, the results weren't there, mm-hmm. but I'm liking what I see from his swing.
I think it's who he was facing. Volquez throws a lot of balls around the plate, not so much on the plate, and Pablo Sandoval is a bad ball hitter, meaning he can hit the ball that almost bounces. He can hit the ball above his head. He can hit the ball 4 or 5 inches off the plate. It's just... His approach in the playoffs is no different than it is any other time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go up and swing at what I think I can hit. There's not really an approach to Pablo, and, you know, it's been working. I don't think it's more of a swing than it is just a mindset, knowing that playoff pitchers trying to go to a guy's weakness, and really he doesn't have a weakness, mm-hmm. saying that, you know, he doesn't have a strike zone. He hits the ball way in. He hits the ball way off the plate. He hits the ball all over the plate. So, you know, it's just you have to hope, I think, as an opposing player or opposing pitcher that he gets himself out.
It's funny. Dan Shulman and the guys doing the game last night were talking about, they were drawing a comparison between Pablo Sandoval and Vladimir Guerrero, who's mm-hmm. you know, phenomenal bad ball hitter. And I was thinking about it while they were talking, and it seemed in particular because of Pablo Sandoval's approach. I remember talking to Mickey Hatcher, who was the Angels hitting coach when Vladimir was there. And Mickey Hatcher was making the point, and I asked him because I'd seen Vladimir with the Expos. I'd seen him in the minors. I mean, we all heard mm-hmm. stories. Vladimir hit a double off the wall in AA and the pitch that bounced six inches in front of the plate, sure. all that stuff. And I asked him about Vladimir Guerrero, and he said, watching Vladimir Guerrero hit, he said, it's like watching somebody return a shot in tennis
mm-hmm.
in that he's got arm angles. I mean, he can do a variety of things. At the end of the day, he gets the bat head and the ball.
That's the whole key, is getting it out in front of the plate. But I would love to sit down and ask a guy like that what their approach is, because it's unorthodox. It's like going to a knuckleball guy and asking him how you throw a fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can't relate. So it would be real interesting to sit down with a guy like Pablo and ask him, what's your approach on an everyday basis? How do you go to the plate and try to beat a guy? Because his approach is going to be totally different than everybody else's. It's like you said, he can hit the ball that bounces
mm-hmm.
and the ball above his head. Well, nobody else will swing at those balls. So,
and the amazing thing about those guys, too, is not only do they make contact, and Vladimir especially, Vladimir can make hard contact
sure.
on a ball that bounces. And then the same thing, pardon me, the same thing with Pablo Sandoval.
I think it's just a confidence factor. I think that's what it gets down to, is they're very confident in themselves and what they can do at the plate, and they're not going to change no matter what the situation is. And you have to give him credit. He steps up in big times.
So the American League matchup is set. They'll play today. You've got the Orioles and the Tigers. You've got the Royals and the Angels. I've made my pick. I think the Tigers beat the Orioles in 5 games. I think the Angels beat the Royals in 4. You, of course, are going to disagree, aren't you?
I'm going to say just the opposite of that. I think Baltimore has a better bullpen. I think the 3-run home run in Baltimore is going to beat the Tigers. I just don't think they – I think Baltimore is going to pitch around the two big guys in the middle of the lineup, meaning Cabrera and Victor Martinez. I just don't think – I think there's too many ifs going into the playoffs with Detroit. And I think Kansas City's – I think this is what I'm going to say about Kansas City. I don't think speed ever slumps.
Mm-hmm.
And meaning that – speed always puts pressure on everybody that's playing on the other team. So when Kansas City gets on base, it's just going to be – they're going to run like crazy. And I think the only difference between that series and the other one is managing-wise. I think what are we going to see Ned Yost do? I think is it going to be good, or is it going to be bad, or is he just going to, you know, step back and let his team do what they do? And I just think it's going to be real tough for the Angels to figure that speed thing out, because like I said, you can stop a team from hitting home runs by making good pitches. Can they stop Kansas City enough getting on base and stop the running game? Because the running game it puts a lot of pressure on everyone, including the pitching staff and especially your catcher. Iannetta, what's he going to do? Can he throw out enough guys to keep guys honest, or is it going to be just like it wasn't against Oakland? Are they just going to keep running until they can't run anymore?
Yeah, and the problem that that the Angels face is that their two catchers, Hank Conger, who's a better defensive catcher, a tremendous pitch framer. We know that that's a big thing in baseball right now.
But doesn't throw as well.
They're going to have some defensive issues. Look, I wrote an item on sportsnet.ca. The one thing I will say about Baltimore, and I didn't even, you know, and we've seen the Orioles a lot, but I didn't even know this, really. I hadn't really broken it down. But if you look at the Orioles' bullpen, I mean, it is far and away to me the biggest edge in this series. And the mm-hmm. Tigers have got an edge in starting pitching, maybe not as much as we think.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the day, the Tigers' lineup might be better. But you look at Baltimore's bullpen, you know, we talk about Zach Britton at the end, Andrew Miller at the end. To me, a guy who's going to be really, really important is Darren O'Day. He's
pitching
got that funky right-handed pitcher mm-hmm. delivery. he stranded 90.8% of base runners. He finished ninth among AL relievers in whip, 0.89, held opposing hitters to 1.72 or 0.172 average. But this is the thing. Ian Kinsler, Torrey Hunter, Miguel Cabrera, J.D. Martinez, they're combined 7-for-26 mm-hmm. against him. Torrey Hunter, who always seems to be in the middle of a rally for the Tigers, he's 2-for-12 with 4 strikeouts. So I look at the Orioles, and the one thing I will say, and the one reason I really, really thought about the Orioles is I just like their bullpen better. I like Buck Showalter's ability to use his bullpen better. Frankly, I trust him more than Brad Ausmus. At the end of the day, though, this is a gut call for me. I think Justin Verlander's going to have a big postseason. And best of 5 series, to me, game 2 is always the biggest. You're mm-hmm. either 1-1 or you're 2-0 going right. home in that case. So that was a gut call with Justin Verlander. But it's going to be a tough series.
It is. I think it depends on how many balls stay in the yard. I think that's what it all gets down to, is Baltimore hits a lot of home runs. And that 3-run home run in the 3rd inning is going to kill Detroit. It's just going to be real hard to come back from by what you just said, that back end of that bullpen with Tommy Hunter and Miller coming from the Red Sox. You can go left-hander that throws almost 100 and a right-hander that throws almost 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Zach Britton's having a great season too. I think this is where you get into how good your manager. Your manager here is going to be a lot of, they're going to make decisions from that sixth inning on that's going to either make your team or break your team just by matchups. It's like you said, when does Showalter bring in O'Day? When does he bring that guy in to face? Is he just bringing him in to face one guy like a Cabrera? Because you look on deck, you got Victor Martinez that could be up for the MVP. Not saying he's going to get it, obviously, because he's a DH. But that's where you get into veteran leadership as a manager. Is he going to flip a coin? This is where it gets real interesting to watch. And that's ultimately going to make these two teams or break one of them.
The other aspect of this series to keep in mind is the Orioles don't have as much postseason experience as the Tigers. But Nelson Cruz, 34 career postseason games, 14 home runs. He had a six-homer series. Granted, that was in 2011 against the Tigers. But he homered twice off Justin Verlander. He's hit a grand slam. He's also homered off Max Scherzer. So when you look at the Orioles and Tigers and you compare the postseason, the levels of postseason experience, keep in mind you've got one guy who's been uber successful in the postseason.
So what that says, by what you just said, you have to make other guys beat you. So I think it gets down to these two teams are about the same team, but one has a little bit more experience. It has to be that I don't think one team is going to let the other two superstars on the other team beat them. So it's going to be like an Ian Kinsler that has a great series.
Or JD Martinez.
Exactly right. So it's going to be one of the other guys. It's not going to be what I'm saying is it's not they're not going to let the other superstars on the team beat them. So it's going to have to be that one like a Diaza for Baltimore that comes in and gets that huge hit in the seventh inning off a tough left-hander. It's going to be, you know, like I said, it's going to be real interesting to watch two great, let's face it, these are two really, really good teams.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating series. Anthony Castrovinci is a national baseball writer for MLB.com. He will be covering the Tigers and Orioles, and Anthony joins us from Baltimore. Anthony, thanks so much for doing this today. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
So Kevin and I spent some time talking about this particular series, and I picked the Tigers to win, kind of a gut call. But when I look at these two teams and everything, I try to balance stuff out, Anthony. The one big edge I keep getting to with the Orioles is I just like their bullpen and their manager's ability to use their bullpen and to use the options he has more frankly than I like Brad Ausmus's bullpen and his ability to use his options.
Yeah, I'm the same exact way. I do. I keep, you know, people keep asking me. I keep picking the Tigers, even though I have that kind of burning image of my mind of Joe Nathan on the mound in the ninth and the base runners on. And, you know, we've seen a lot of those hairy innings for him this season. You kind of worry about that. It's not even just him in particular. You know, Jabba Chamberlain wasn't as effective in the second half as he was in the first. You know, they got Soria back healthy, so we'll see how to Joaquin Soria, see how they utilize him. Anibal Sanchez is back there for him. See if they trust him in high leverage spots. You know, he's never been a reliever before, so that'll be interesting. But yeah, overall, the Orioles just have so much depth, so many weapons back there. Zach Britton has really come on for them in the closing role, and Andrew Miller, what he's added since the trade deadline. Even Ubaldo Jimenez might be an interesting bullpen piece for them.
You know, right, he's been added to the roster. So.
Yeah, he can be effective in short spurts against right-handers. So, I don't know. And Showalter, the guy's never won a playoff series, as brilliant as he is. But I think this is, who knows, this could be his best chance to do so because of that very factor.
Yeah, Anthony, who's going to be the X factor on these two teams? We know both of these teams have really good players on them. One team in Detroit has an MVP on both sides of the ball. But I think looking at these two teams, I'm sure they're going to look at it just like we are. They're not going to let the superstars beat them. So who do you think is going to be the one guy on both of these teams that's going to step it up in this series?
Well, I think Ian Kinsler is really big for the Tigers. He had a tough second half, not nearly as well as first, and that kind of fit with the mode of the team as well. I think when he gets hot, they are hot, obviously in that leadoff spot. The speed element he can bring if he gets on base, they haven't had that really so much in past playoff years. So I think that could be a big thing for them. And And for the Orioles, you know, Steve Pierce lengthens that lineup. A lot of people talk about Chris Davis being out, but, you know, Steve Pierce, there's 20 home runs here this season. And, you know, you can pitch around Adam Jones a little bit, but at some point Steve Pierce is looming there. So if he comes through, I also think, you know, a guy who's stepped up on the postseason stage many times in the past is Delmon Young, and he's a nice bat off their bench, particularly against left-handers. So he could be a factor in this series as well.
Mm-hmm. We will have the Tigers and Orioles game one of the ALDS on Sportsnet 1, first pitch at 5:37. We'll join that game in progress on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, 8:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 1. It'll be the Royals and the Angels. We'll have that game live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Anthony Castrovinci of MLB.com joins us, continuing our discussion on the ALDS. I want to shift a little bit over to the Royals and Angels. And I guess one of the storylines here, Anthony, is it's kind of interesting. It's Derek Jeter's retired. He's played his last game in the major leagues, and along comes Mike Trout making his postseason debut. I mean, he's a guy a lot of people look at as maybe being the next face of the game. It's this could be his time, couldn't it?
It could. And, you know, let's face it, so much of the Derek Jeter mystique just comes down to him being in October every single year. And, you know, really doing so much within those Octobers. So here's Mike Trout's first opportunity. I guess it feels like a long time. It feels like the guy's been around forever. It's only three full seasons. But, you know, he gets that first crack at it. And yeah, I mean, this could be his moment. If he's not already a household name, this is a good time to become one.
Yeah, Anthony, how big of a influence is Josh Hamilton going to be in this series? I think he's going to play and maybe hit seventh, I heard. Is he going to be a big deal or not really?
It's really hard to say. It's kind of been that way all year. You know, keeping him on the field, keeping him healthy has been a real challenge for them at this stage in his career. We know what's in that bat, mm-hmm. You know. We've seen it many times in the past. But, yeah, he's such a wild card for them, I think, because, you know, keeping him in the lineup and at what level.
Right.
Hey, Anthony, we were talking yesterday about the attempt Major League Baseball is going to make in the Arizona Fall League and trying to speed up that game. Now, I know obviously right. Everybody's focused on the postseason. I'm just wondering if you had a chance, if there's been any feedback from any of the managers or the players about some of these rules designed to speed up the game.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard much about that yet. You know, there's a lot of off days in the playoffs, so I'm sure this will be more of a talking point as we go. It's just kind of been wrapped up in the preview type stuff. But I will say that there was a lot of, you know, raised eyebrows in a good way at what the Atlantic League did this year. Some of these same implementations that, you know, they used and really helped them speed up the process a little bit. And I don't know how receptive players are going to be to something like a pitch clock, something that's one of the elements they're doing. But some of the other stuff really makes sense. And I think it really has to happen organically, you know, at the lower levels of minors. And that's why it could take some time to become the norm at the major league level. But if you install that mentality of, you know, hey, you got to keep your foot in the batter's box, you know, at a low level, it's a lot easier to do it that way than to all of a sudden change course at the major league level and say you have to do it this way. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's certainly welcome that this is a topic that Major League Baseball is interested in and invested in. But it's also pretty low risk and, you know, not binding to do it in the Arizona Fall League, a very low profile situation.
Anthony, how much pressure's on Brad Ausmus in this series?
Yeah, a lot. You know, and that's Tigers team in general. There's just a lot of pressure because they're built to win right now. And, you know, you don't know how long this window, so to speak, is going to stay open for them just because they are an aging club. You know, we look at the Phillies, for example. I mean, this Tigers team could become the Phillies very quickly if they're not too careful. So, you know, they got to seize this moment. And he's a rookie skipper, but he's very wise, I think. He knows the game very well. I think sometimes his bullpen, like any manager, sometimes his bullpen habits have come into question. He made a really bold decision, I think, in having Justin Verlander start second game over David Price, having Price third, because, you know, that comes back into play. If this does go five games, as so many people think it will, you know, it's Verlander over Price there, too. So, you know, a lot of pressure on him, a lot of pressure on everybody in that clubhouse. This team, this is their moment.
Anthony, let me ask you real quick about the Angels and the Royals real quick. We all know the Royals can't hit a home run, but they can pretty much run on the bases when they want to. With that being said, how did the Angels stop that?
Yeah, it's hard to stop. I do think that the one thing that helped the Royals in that wild card game was the injury behind the plate to Soto, and then the Derek mm-hmm. Norris specter. He's not as strong at throwing out runners. Whether that comes into play as much in this series, I don't know. But yeah, the Angels, I guess they just get in people's heads more than anything else. I will say their bullpen guys generally are known to hold runners well. A guy like Joe Smith, for instance, who's been a real workhorse for them. So that comes into play. But yeah, we see what speed does at this level, mm-hmm. especially at a time in baseball where there's not nearly as much power. The Royals kind of take that to the extreme on both sides, yeah. obviously, but there is something to be said for just jarring the mentality of the guy in the mound.
Anthony, it was good of you to join us today. Enjoy the game tonight and enjoy the series.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thanks, guys. Thanks Take for care. Having me on.
It's Anthony Castrovinci. You can follow him on MLB.com. His Twitter handle is, drumroll, Jeff can't find his Twitter handle. Oh, it's a difficult one. It's at Castrovinci. It's Castrovince. We appreciate him joining us. The Orioles have announced their ALDS roster. Ubaldo Jimenez, somewhat surprisingly, on the roster as a long reliever. Brian Matthews, TJ McFarland, not on the roster. So the Orioles will only have two lefties in the bullpen. And that's a bit of an interesting decision by Buck Showalter. I mean, I think maybe looks at Ubaldo Jimenez as a power arm he can bring out.
He looks different. Batters. I think it's more of his windup, too. It's just a different look.
That's true. It's a kind of a funky arm angle. We made that point when we looked at the Orioles bullpen. I mean, you look at Miller, you look at Britton, you look at Darren O'Day mm-hmm. from the side. Now you've got Ubaldo Jimenez. It's not always just a matter of lefty-righty, lefty-righty. If you've mm-hmm. got a left-hander with got a little bit of funk in his delivery.
Sometimes they don't have to throw strikes. It's just how it looks.
It's how it looks, exactly. Right. And as we said, I guess if you're Buck Showalter, you're maximizing your options. So there you go, Ubaldo Jimenez on the Baltimore Orioles postseason roster. As I said, we'll have the Orioles and Tigers. 5:37 first pitch tonight in Sportsnet 1. We will join the game in progress in Sportsnet 590, The Fan, after primetime sports with Bob McCown. 8:30 p.m. tonight, Sportsnet 1. The Royals and Angels will get at it. We will carry that game live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of Baseball Central at noon on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Oh, we're back. Gonna do a little air guitar there.
You were, though.
Welcome back to Baseball Central at Noon, the penultimate edition of Baseball Central at Noon.
Shed
a tear.
You didn't pick your team, right?
What team?
In the night game. Did you pick your team?
Yeah, I did. I got the Angels winning that series in 4, and I got the Orioles or the Tigers winning in 5.
Oh.
I'm making my NL picks on the website tomorrow.
Oh, you did say that right out the gate, and I disagree with both games.
No, you just didn't disagree. You just weren't listening, as is normal. Hey, you got a funny story about Bruce Bochy, and I'm just going to kind of set this up for people. Of course, you know Bruce Bochy, the San Francisco Giants manager. I've always thought he's one of the most underrated managers in the game. He could win his third World Series in about 6 years.
Sure.
He's taken another team to the World Series. He's taken two other teams to the World Series that didn't win. He took the Giants to the World Series the year they lost to the Angels, mm-hmm. I believe. And I know he took the San Diego Padres to the World Series the year they lost to the New York Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
But Bruce Bochy is... I mean, in addition to being a tremendous manager and a guy who obviously, knows how to get a team ready to win an elimination.
Players manager.
He's a players manager. He's also one of the, and people always talk about a guy being a nice guy. He's one of the most genuinely nice people you're going to meet. I mean, I spring training a couple of times and I went to Arizona. There's this, I'd go down to this bar with a couple of the writers. You'd always run into Bochy down there. Sometimes Brian Sabian was with them. You'd always run into them. They'd always buy you a drink. Didn't matter who you were. Mm-hmm. Buy you a drink, sit and chat. And then, you know, you go off and do your thing. But you've got a great story about Bruce Bochy that I think really sums up what the guy's about.
Well, when I was with the Brewers for 6 years, and then I got picked up by San Diego, and I went to spring training late, and then I went to AAA, and I think Ryan Klesko may have gotten hurt. He was playing first base for the Padres in the big leagues, and he gotten hurt, and I gotten called up, and I was up for, I don't know, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks or so, and I think Bruce Bochy was, he liked me. He liked what I had to offer. I was a lefty off the bench, and, you know, I could hit a fastball at the time, and yada, yada. And the whole point being was, is I was the odd guy out when Klesko was coming back, and he really didn't want to send me down, but, you know, managers, or they have to do what they have to do. So he calls me in his office, and he was, you could tell he really didn't want to do it, and he felt really super bad. Now, mind you, he had no idea who I was. Obviously, he really didn't know what kind of player I was until I got called up, and it just, you know, I was one of those guys on the radar, and I was just getting called up because of necessity and things like that. And he sent me down, and right before I went over to shake his hand, he said he felt so bad by sending me down that he said, I'd like to buy you a drink later. Just, you know, because you could tell it was killing him, yeah, to send me down for some reason. So he was trying to tell me where at some hotel he was, some fancy bar in a hotel he was, mm-hmm, he was at. And he said, come out and I'll buy you a drink, and, you know, we'll smooth things over. And I actually went to the bar and had a drink with him. And it was just the fact that he offered and he felt so bad. And it was, you know, he wanted you to feel like part of the family, mm-hmm, and he wanted you to feel like, hey, you're going to get called up again, which I never did, but he wanted me to feel like, you know, this is the way I run things. This is, you know, you want 6-year free agent guys to come in and contribute throughout the year. And I think he wanted to be known around baseball. This is the kind of manager he is. And he's this kind of person, and he cares, because let's face it, a lot of managers don't care. It's a numbers game, and they're looking out for more themselves than they are their team. And he's not one of those guys. And the point being is you can wonder why teams are where they're at, but wondering why the Giants are pretty much in the mix year after year, to me, there's no wonder why, just by knowing Bruce Bochy and knowing the type of person he is and knowing how he cares about people more than the actual player is, you know, is a lost thing in baseball. So I just want to say I really appreciate that. And it was just a good thing in my career to actually, yeah, meet him and be a part of that. And
it shows you. It shows you something about a guy, the way they about a manager, the way they go about dealing with players who've been released or have been sent down. And, mm-hmm, I mean, I can tell you from talking to him a little bit, a couple of one-on-ones in spring training and during the postseason, he's not as smooth as Joe Torre.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to having an empathy for people, and by that I mean when it comes to exuding sort of a sense of caring about people, he's right there with Joe Torre. Joe Torre always had a knack of kind of humanizing, mm-hmm, stuff, and an empathetic person. And Bruce Bochy's very much like that. Yeah. And, you know, it really is one of the reasons. I truly believe this. It's really one of the reasons that his teams perform so well in the postseason. And mm-hmm, I'm lucky enough. There's an assistant general manager, Tony Siegel, with the Giants, who I've known for a while. He's a longtime baseball executive. He's with the Montreal Expos, and I've talked to him about Bruce Bochy, and he said, yeah, I mean, that's the sense he creates among that, mm-hmm, team. By the way, got to add Dusty Baker. Yeah, God, I covered the series. Mm-hmm. I forgot that. Dusty Baker managed the Giants in 2002.
Great manager, too.
Bruce Bochy won 4 division titles and the 1998 pennant in San Diego. That from Simon Sharkey Gottlieb on Twitter. So Simon Sharkey Gottlieb, who's got a picture of Yuppie on his on his little Twitter icon. Thank you for clarifying that.
I think Bruce gets the most out of his players because if I think on paper the Giants are not the best team in baseball. That's why you have to have guys as your manager that gets the most out of every player. That'll go to a player and say, hey, man, can you pick it up? Let's get this done. Just little things of encouragement, I think, throughout a season that can help your team when it comes to the one-game playoff like we saw Crawford hitting a grand slam. Nobody expected that guy to hit a grand slam, but I'm sure Bruce Bochy was the one guy that has a lot of confidence in the shortstop that can do things like that. So it's just little things that managers do to get the most out of your players. And to the other side of that, I have had people release me that's flipped the release paper at me that didn't even know my name. And you knowing me the way I do, that didn't go too well.
Yeah, I can see the
difference.
It'd be like Bo Porter teaching you base stealing.
First day of spring training.
By the way, that's the funniest thing in the MLB network. They just had Bo Porter talking about Ned Yost's managing. You need a decoder board to understand that. It's like the magic man, Bo Porter.
Hey, I could just say this. He's been a big league manager, and we haven't. So you can say what you want. But
yeah, but I'm a better manager than he is. So are you. But you take a look at the managers left left in the postseason. You've got Buck Showalter with Baltimore, Brad Ausmus with Detroit, Matt Williams with Washington, Mike Matheny with St. Louis. You got Don Mattingly, Ned Yost. We already talked about him, of course. You got Buck Showalter, and I skipped over somebody. No, maybe I didn't. I think I got everybody. But when you look at the managers that are left, you've got a lot of different styles. You've got a lot of different personalities. You've got a vast difference in experience. Ned Yost's managing is going to be a storyline in the Angels series for a variety of reasons. One, we saw all year. I mean, the way he uses the bunt, doesn't matter what inning it is. Some of his decisions with relievers, he's very cut and dry. He doesn't bring his middle reliever. He's got a seventh inning middle reliever. His seventh inning middle reliever doesn't come in the sixth inning. Doesn't come in when it's 5 2/3. Mm-hmm. Seventh inning reliever's got to come in the seventh. He's going against a guy in Mike Socha who's considered to be a pretty savvy manager. But I wanted to ask you, when you have a manager like Ned Yost who does weird stuff, how does that affect the team's approach when you know you've got a manager who's capable of making odd decisions? And you know what? Hey, sometimes they work. But how does that affect the team?
I'm sure it affects it a lot. I think Kansas City's like no other team in the playoffs, though. They don't rely on anything other than speed. Speed is their game. That's how they score runs and the occasional double, maybe triple. But they rely more on, let's get the high chopper over the pitcher's head, get on first base, and run till somebody tags us out. I'm not real sure you can mess that managerial thing up. But the only thing we've noticed that he could mess up by what you were saying is he goes from the starting rotation to the seventh inning. Well, what does he do in the sixth inning? That's going to be the question.
Put another starter in.
Exactly right. So that's going to be to me, that's the only way he can screw this up. Just because everything else is going to take care of itself. He just makes the lineup up. Maybe doesn't do the Butler trying to steal second base with a guy on third base and two outs. Stays away from things like that and just do what you normally do. Bunting guys over and things like that, that's what you do. That's how you've won games.
Not in the third inning, though.
Well, again, it's you know what it is, though? The Royals, that's how they mess up the whole feel of the game is they put so much pressure on. They figure if fielding guy on the field is the pitcher.
Right.
The more times you get that guy involved, the more chances you have of winning. They say that to everybody in spring training when you're bunting. Get the worst guy in the field involved. That's the pitcher. That's the Royals thing. You can get that guy involved more times than not. He's going to chuck one over the first baseman's head in the second row. Bad things can happen. So I think, you know, if he can stay out of managing the first five innings – and figure out how to manage the sixth inning, he's got the entire game whipped.
Yeah.
If you think about it, because from the seventh inning on in the bullpen, he's got the best bullpen in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, just run out another guy throwing 100.
You just, exactly right. So what
Find
do you
me
do?
Another guy throwing 100. Take the
so
other
it can't
guy
be Ventura,
100.
I think, because he's starting the second game. So now it's going to have to be somebody else in the sixth inning. But you would think he's going to Now he knows that if this happens again, what am I going to do? You think he's going to have options and he's going to figure it out. Maybe it's just that one game and it snuck up on him.
By the way, a listener, Adam Bollea, I hope I pronounced it right in Twitter. Actually, jogged my memory here. I wanted to ask you this. Pablo Sandoval, we were talking about earlier, he's a free agent. He's a third baseman. The Jays need an infielder. They can sign him, move Brett Laurie to second. A lot of people have talked about him. I know Wilner's been talking about him. He's a guy who might fall into their price range. He's also a guy, he's got had a history of weight issues, but we talked about it. He can hit the ball anywhere. He's a guy that might do real well at the Rogers Center. Like, I can see a lot of balls. Mm-hmm. I can see a lot of ground rule doubles there. Would you go after him if you're the Blue Jays?
Why not? Well, if he's going to help your team, but I don't know about the price. Is he going to be a little outpriced for the Jays?
Well, I mean, they've got some wiggle room, and you know, they're not going to be picky with free agents. If you want to come, they'll consider you. It's a possibility. I've looked at him as being a guy I might take a shot at.
My thoughts are, why don't you use that money to sign Melky Cabrera?
Well, I'm presuming you won't sign Melky.
I know that, but why don't you? Why don't you use more money to do that? And then wherever you put Brett Laurie at second or third, that's the one guy at the back end of your lineup, whether it be Goins or whoever the case may be, that you can hide offensive-wise. But if you sign Cabrera, all of those little problems that you have, especially 1 through 6, with the way Devaro starting to swing the bat and coming into his own hitting-wise, it makes a little bit more sense to go out. I know it's not going to happen.
Right.
But why not use that money? And it would be a good situation if you could sign Pablo, but it just would make more sense. A guy that's already had success in Toronto, go spend your money on the guy that's already here and done it here before, and then that third base and that second base situation will take care of itself.
Got a couple of little newsy items to get to, by the way. Anthony Alford, an outfield prospect, played quarterback for Southern Miss in 2012, sat out 2013, transferring to Ole Miss, where he's a backup safety and punt returner this season. Pretty decent football prospect, also drafted by the Blue Jays. He has decided that he will pursue baseball over football. He'll be going to the Instructional League. There's talk they may send him to the Australian Winter League. And he may be in big league camp in 2015. Who knows? At least to get allow the Blue Jays to get a sense of what he's about. The other story: Munenori Kawasaki and Dan Johnson were outrighted to Buffalo. Nothing yet on George Kateris. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is George Kateris saw no action when the Jays brought him up from Ottawa. From Buffalo. Yet this is a guy who caught Tim Wakefield. This is a guy who can catch a knuckleball. He's a better offensive player by far than Josh Tholey. He could take a walk, all that good stuff. I would like to see the Blue Jays bring this guy back next year and give him a shot. If they're going to have R.A. Dickey, I'd rather have him catching R.A. Dickey than
me
Josh
too.
Tholey.
It gets back to, we'll say it again, I know Cabrera's not coming back, but if he doesn't, you have so many holes, center field, left field, second base, and then third base never plays or doesn't play a full season. You have to have guys that can hit off the bench. And if he's – obviously, he's going to hit a little bit better than Josh Tholey. And if he can catch the knuckleball at all, it makes total sense to me.
I found it surprising that he saw such little action with the Jays in September. I really did. But anyhow, so those are a couple of little news items. A lot of teams that aren't in the playoffs will be doing a lot of housekeeping, making up making a few roster moves until then. I just want to let folks in Toronto know, by the way, that tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, Paul Beeston, the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, will be joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Again, 9 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Paul Beeston will join us. That's it for us for today. One more day of Baseball Central for Anthony Castrovinci of MLB.com and for Kevin Barker. I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us on Baseball Central at Noon, brought to you, as always, by Home Hardware. Enjoy the playoffs tonight. We'll chat again tomorrow. Take care, everybody.